Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording in the early hours of the morning, April 21, 2013. This would be nav briefing number 58, and the title is FGS 3.0. As I've often said, the nav briefings that I've developed in the course of the GNE, which began in June of 2011, are carefully calibrated to the time in which they're delivered. So the material in many of the nav briefings that are now on GaiaSpora.org is closely time factored, of course. This applies because a good part of the Gaia navigation experience involves the observation of astronomical events in real time. And so I gauge the timing and the subject of a briefing according to the events that are happening around the time I do it. Those who follow the practice are familiar with the lunar cycles, which happen every 28 days or so. We are currently in a lunar cycle that began on the 11th of April, the cycle of Chinamasta, and today would be the 12th day of that lunar cycle. Crew of the GNE are also familiar with the two signal moments each month when the moon is in its apogee, its point most distant from the Earth, and when it's in its perigee, closest to the Earth. And these are the so-called moments of the lunar surge. Part of the practice of the GNE is to observe these moments, both externally in regard to events in nature, events across the planet and around the world, and to observe them in one's own psyche. This experiment operates simultaneously and in parallel by self-observation and observation of the natural world right out to the realm of the stars and planets. So consequently, anyone who might by random occasion tune into this talk might be inclined to think that the material is not relevant. If I'm speaking in late April 2013, about particular terrestrial, lunar, and planetary events of that moment, and I'm gauging the theme and content of the briefing to that moment, it's natural that someone tuning in at random might assume that this material is no longer relevant. But as I commence this unusually pertinent briefing on the Fallen Goddess Scenario, FGS, I would like to emphasize something that I've said on numerous occasions in the past. Although the theme and content of the nav briefings is closely time-factored to the moment in which they're given, because they are, after all, navigational briefings in real time, nevertheless, the content of these briefings has a value, a significance, a resonance, and many, many implications that extend beyond the moment in which they're delivered. That was never more true of any briefing I gave than the present briefing, number 58. You might be a faithful crew member who has followed all of the 57 briefings up until this one, who has read Nod in his image, who has explored, investigated, and integrated the Sophianic material on metahistory.org. Or you might be just someone who has dropped into this talk by chance, or someone who knows the name of John Lash and perhaps is curious to see what he has to say. You may be listening within a day or two of the moment this talk is posted on GaiaSpora.org. You may be listening a week later, a month later, or even years later. Whatever the case, I want you who are listening right now to know that the material I cover in this NAV briefing is comprehensive and inclusive. The material that I discuss regarding the development of the Fallen Goddess scenario from its 1.0 version to its 3.0 version, which is current, is not dated, cannot be dated by the time and circumstances in which it is delivered, and in a certain respect, if I may be so presumptuous as to say so, will never be dated. And so I'm happy to say that as I deliver this briefing, I have an acute awareness of speaking in two domains at once. And more in the future, I may deliver my talks in this same manner, in this same perspective. That is to say, I know, in the first place, that I am talking to crew members who are faithful to the GNE, who live in the Sophianic vision story, who understand the details and implications of what I'm saying, and who are deeply intimate with the material I am discussing. On the other hand, were that not to be the case, were the listener to be a novice or a newcomer, I can still speak simultaneously to that individual. And in fact, I would like to dedicate this NAV briefing 57 to those individuals who are coming into contact for the first time and learning about planetary tantra, the terma of Gaia awakening, the Sophianic vision story, and the GNE. I would like to dedicate this talk to these novices, and I would frame it for both the novices and veteran crew members in this way. Picture the navigation deck of the mother ship, which is the planet Earth. And there I am on the navigation deck, John Lash, the navigator, with my table of charts and my lists of the real-time events in the 3 years of the initial conditions of Sophia's correction, March 2011 to March 2014. And standing around me in a semicircle are the dedicated members of the GNE crew who have been following the navigation process. And let's suppose that additionally, from this moment on, standing also around the close semicircle of the crew is a larger and ever-growing circle of people. I will call them the newcomers. You may be one of those newcomers. And so I am going to deliver this NAV briefing to the crew, as always, but I'm going to deliver it as if I were speaking to the newcomers. And so I'm going to talk about myself and the crew of the GNE in the third person. And that is how I intend to proceed with this NAV briefing. So here goes. Anyone who is a newcomer to planetary tantra, the terma of Gaia awakening, and the Gaia navigation experiment ought to know at the outset the foundation of this experiment and how it came to be. Since June of 2011, the writer, author, mythologist, and, if you will, visionary teacher, John Lash, has been involved in a unique experiment with a crew or team of people around the world. The members of this crew are not physically present with John, where he lives at this time, but they are certainly physically present in another sense, because they are with him on a mother ship, that is to say, the planet Earth. In the Gaia navigation experiment, John and the crew use the nautical metaphor, comparing the planet Earth to a ship on a journey through space. The specifics of this journey are quite concrete and quite exact. Considered as a planetary vessel, the Earth is traveling in the third limb of the galactic arms of the galaxy where the solar system is located. This galaxy has a center and four or five spiraling limbs. And in the third limb, counting from the center outward, there is the solar system moving like a fleet of ships upstream along the galactic arm. This is the astronomical navigational journey of the mother ship. John Lash, the navigator, and the crew have created the Gaia navigation experiment in order to observe particulars of this journey and in order to describe this journey. In the process of doing so, the GNE is established on the basis of an ancient body of textual material. This material is drawn from the writings that remain of a group of people who were quite extensive in the time that they lived, but who were eliminated by a long-term program of intellectual and cultural genocide, which included murder and suppression. These people are known historically as the Gnostics. John and the crew members prefer to call them the Telestai, T-E-L-E-S-T-A-I. This is a Greek word, the plural form of telestis, which means one who is aimed. So the Telestai were Gnostics, indeed. They were those who had special knowledge of the universe, and particularly of the origin of humanity and the earth. The Telestai were Gnostics, visionary seers, shamans, call them what you will. And they were the teachers and educators of the classical world in pre-Christian antiquity. The Gnostics, or Telestai, had a system of education based on cells that were located regionally throughout the Mediterranean basin and all across Europe. Throughout the years of his writing and teaching, including the signal year of 2006, when Not in His Image was published, the navigator has had the habit of concentrating on the educational cells that were located in the area of the Levant, that is to say, what is Syria and Lebanon today. Because crucial information about the long-term history of humanity and the planet comes from the seers of that region, or specifically from the Levantine mysteries, the Levantine mystery schools. Now, in these mystery schools, many things were taught, but primarily the centerpiece of the spiritual educational program of the mysteries was a single and supreme visionary narrative or myth. Now, when John Lash uses the term myth, he does not use it in the derogatory sense, that is to say, of a fiction or a deliberate lie. For instance, the myth of global terrorism. Rather, he uses it in the classical term before it was corrupted to mean a lie. Originally, in the times of Plato and Aristotle, the Greek word mythos simply meant a story, a narrative, an account of something that happened. So, in the vein of Planetary Tantra and the GNE, a myth is simply a description of something that is happening. The Sophianic myth, or Sophianic vision story, is a description of the origin of the human race and of the planet Earth, and many other factors in the long-term experience of life on Earth. It is from the Sophianic myth that the navigator draws the foundational elements of the GNE, or Gaian Navigation Experiment. Now, how can you, as a newcomer, understand the foundation of an experiment based on a myth? To be understood, please mind you, as a true description presented in mythological and poetic terms, if you will, a true description of actual events in the cosmos. The Sophianic myth is a true description. It is not a fiction or fabulation. It is a use of mystical and metaphorical language to describe a sequence of sublime events. John initially presented this narrative in 9 episodes in Not in His Image. You can also find versions of the 9-episode narrative on metahistory.org, The Fall of the Wisdom Goddess. For the purposes of annotation, this narrative can be called FGS, The Fallen Goddess Scenario. The title of this NAB briefing is FGS 3.0. Obviously, you as a newcomer would understand that if there is an FGS 3.0 in development right now, then there must have been an FGS 2.0 and an FGS 1.0 preceding it. So now let me see if I can, in this briefing, describe the evolution of these narratives to the present moment, April 2013. In preparation for writing his book, Not in His Image, which appeared in November 2006, John worked diligently to restore or reconstruct the sacred narrative of the Levantine Mysteries, the Levantine Mystery Schools. Now, this sacred narrative of Sophia was known in different forms and different ways in all of the mystery schools all over Europe, from the Hibernian Mysteries of Scotland and the British Isles, down into the Mediterranean region, down into the depths of Egypt, and far, far eastward toward the area of Asia. So there were many different versions of the Sophianic vision story. But John concluded, upon long and intense research, that that version of the story that was most cohesive and coherent, as well as most comprehensive, and that could be rendered in a user-friendly manner today, including the conversion of its language into astronomical terms, was found among those mystery schools in the Levant, including also the area of Palestine, because there were Gnostic mystery schools in Jordan and in Palestine, and particularly the last ones were thriving there, under the so-called Nabataean culture of Jordan. So, FGS 1.0 is the designation given to the first restoration of Sophianic vision narrative that John accomplished, and he published simultaneously on metahistory.org and in his book, Not in His Image. It is a 9-episode summary of the Fall of the Wisdom Goddess. The Fall of the Wisdom Goddess is, of course, a mythological or mythopoetic phrase, but it refers to or describes something that actually happened in our galaxy. It describes the actual event wherein humanity came to emerge, the humanity of the human species, the genome of the human species, if you will, came to emerge in this galaxy, and the manner in which the Earth itself was formed and came to be the habitat or laboratory setting, if you will, for the Anthropos to evolve. FGS 1.0 is therefore a restoration of pre-existing materials. John has meticulously explained how he accomplished this restoration. If you go to metahistory.org and you click on the menu bar at Gaia Sophia, you come directly to a directory or an index of the contents of the site. And there you find, scrolling down from the icon of the Coco de Mer with the sun, moon, and earth inscribed upon it, scrolling down from that, you find material relative to Gaia Sophia and the Sophianic vision narrative. After you pass the section on post-correction writings, you come down to the links to those places where you find the 9-episode restoration of the sacred narrative of the mysteries. The Fall of the Wisdom Goddess is a summary of Sophianic myth and the mysteries in 9 episodes. Then, going along with that, the Fallen Goddess scenario is a summary and evaluation. A planetary myth from pagan mysteries is a foundational essay on metahistory.org, and it shows you that the figure of wisdom, represented as the handmaiden of the Old Testament Father God, is the Gnostic Sophia, a divinity who embodies the earth. She is not merely a servant of the male deity who claims to be the creator of the earth. She is the earth itself. And so this is quintessential reading for orientation to FGS 1.0. Other essays follow, Wooing the Wisdom Goddess, Textual Sources of the Fallen Goddess Scenario, and so forth. Then if you continue to scroll down to the subsection Mythos, you'll see that there are 3 essays, Overview of the Gaian Mythos, Sharing the Gaia Mythos, and Sources of the Gaia Mythos. And these materials, which were among the first that were posted on metahistory.org around 2003 and 2004, describe in detail and in complete transparency how John undertook the task of restoring the Sophianic vision story from the fragmentary materials that remain, due to the fact that the Gnostics, or Telestai, and the mystery schools, which were vast universities spread around the Mediterranean basin in pre-Christian times, due to the fact that these great teachers and seers and the institutions that they established for classical learning were suppressed and destroyed with the rise of Christianity. The evidence, written textual evidence, of the Sophianic myth that survives is extremely sketchy and meager. Nevertheless, given a few flakes of evidence, John was able to reconstruct faithfully the full 9-episode scenario. Now, it's important to newcomers to note, as well as to veteran crew members, to remember that your navigator was extremely cautious and rigorous in the handling of these scanty materials. FGS 1.0 is a reconstruction from the existing or surviving textual material with almost nothing added, almost no elaboration or embellishment of that material. In those instances where John Lash, acting as the only Gnostic scholar who attempted this restoration, did in fact include some elements that cannot be textually supported by the surviving material, he came right out and said so. He didn't hide anything. He didn't pretend that an element added to the story was inherent in the present material. So, when you read the Fallen Goddess scenario, the Fall of the Wisdom Goddess, here I'm clicking in on medhistory.org, you'll find that it is stated in astronomical idiom. That means that the story is told, is retold, and restored using astronomical language. This is not an addition or embellishment to the story, not at all. It is simply a way of setting the story in a modern idiom consistent with its original content. In fact, the Fallen Goddess scenario is an astronomical myth. It is a story of an event that happened in the astronomical dimension of our galaxy. Bear in mind that the setting of the Sophia myth is local. It describes an event that happens locally in the galaxy where the sun, earth, moon, and planets are currently moving. It does not describe the creation of the universe. It does not describe a multi-galactic panorama. Although John points out that a number of the Gnostic materials, such as the Sophia of Jesus Christ, refer specifically to the existence of many galaxies, that is to say, of many pleromas, the pleroma being the Gnostic name for the core of a spiral galaxy. So the Gnostic seers recognized the existence of many galaxies in the universe. The universe is the sum or totality of all these galaxies, universe with a capital U. So the Sophia myth is not the story of the creation of the universe with a capital U. It is the story of the creation of humanity and the Earth within the multi-galactic setting of the universe. And all the details of this myth refer specifically to astronomical events in what is called the Milky Way galaxy. So the myth opens with episode 1 in the galactic core, episode 2, the singularity encoded, episode 3, projecting the anthropos, and so forth, all the way down to episode 9, which is current. That is to say, we are now living, you who are hearing these words are now living in the 9th episode of this myth. In restoring the sacred narrative of the mystery schools, the story of the fall of the wisdom goddess, John Lash, acting as a Gnostic scholar, took enormous pains to make this point. This myth is unique in a number of ways. You see its uniqueness, you register the power and incomparability of this myth. When you look at FGS 1.0, because unlike any other myth that you can read from any other culture in the world, be it Polynesia, China, Tibet, India, Scandinavia, or the Greco-Roman world, what you find here is a myth that does not unfold and conclude in the past, but a myth that is ongoing and open-ended. And so the 9th episode of this sacred narrative is entitled Sophia's Correction. And we, living on Earth today, are currently experiencing this episode. And we are part of this episode. So none of this that I am repeating here, none of what I'm recapitulating here, is an invention of the renegade and self-taught Gnostic scholar John Lamb Lash. None of it. It is all totally consistent with the received textual material from Gnostic sources, including Coptic and Greek language sources. And it is all totally consistent with that body of material with nothing added. Now, In presenting FGS 1.0 to the world, John made it clear that he did add two factors to the ancient body of material. The first factor was that he stated that the projection of the Anthropos template of the human species, which is described in a number of Gnostic cosmological treatises, involved depositing that template in a small configuration of bright young stars called the Trapezium in the Orion Nebula. Now, there is no Gnostic text or surviving material in Coptic or Greek, as far as John knows, that states that the Pleuromic Aeons, particularly Sophia and her counterpart Thelete, projected the Anthropos and nested it deliberately in that locale. So the description of that astronomical detail is an addition that John made in composing FGS 1.0. Okay, fine. So far, so good. What then is the second element, the addition or elaboration, that John incorporated into the first rendition of the sacred narrative of the mysteries? Well, this factor is classically known from other sources, which are not generally considered to be Gnostic sources as such. There are variants of this second mythological theme in numerous mythologies around the world, and most certainly in Greco-Latin mythology. You find them showing up. You find a trace of this mythological theme showing up in the Symposium of Plato, where the participants of the dinner party, that's the word, what symposium means, a dinner party, including Socrates, discuss the mysterious matter of the division of the sexes, the separation of the sexes. And so the separation of the sexes is not a theme of John Lash's invention, nor is it a theme that can be detected in specific content within the surviving materials from the mystery schools. Nevertheless, it can be inferred from a comprehensive view of the Sophianic narrative that the event called the separation of the sexes must have occurred somewhere in the course of the events described in that scenario. So John makes an inference here. In the case of locating the deposit of the radiant germ of the Anthropos in the Orion Nebula, he has introduced a truly original factor. And he says clearly and explicitly, in the manner of total transparency, that this is a factor he presents with confidence on the basis of his own telestic and shamanic investigations. But the theme of the separation of the sexes is floating in the air, as it were. It's already there. It's in the human imagination. It's alluded to in many of the mythological materials of the classical world. And so John felt confident in incorporating it as an episode in the Sophianic vision story. Where then does the separation of the sexes occur in the nine episodes of FGS 1.0? It occurs in episode 7, The Living Planet. This is where John has woven into the plot, where he has chosen to insert or weave into the plot the mythological theme of the separation of the sexes. Well, elsewhere in the writings on metahistory.org and also in various recorded talks and interviews, you find that John speaks of this immense, mysterious, and perplexing matter of the separation of the sexes. The way to understand this event in its primordial origins, in the frame of the Sophianic vision story, is to picture that Sophia herself sheared the template of the human genomic strain. She sheared the template as if it were a scarf or web. Imagine that the template were a vast web deposited as a kind of nuclear dew, strings of nuclear dew, in a web-like formation bounded by the four stars of the trapezium buried deep in the Orion Nebula. At a certain moment, the surging torrent of organic light, that is the original pleromic body of the goddess, passed very nearby that web, like a current of wind. And so if you could imagine a directed current of wind, say that you had a straw and you blew through the straw laterally along the surface of a delicate spider's web, you can then imagine that by directing that current of air, that you could form a rent in the spider's web, and you could possibly even draw some fibers of the spider's web into the concentrated current of air that you are blowing through the straw. This is something like the description John presents for the event of the separation of the sexes, which was due to the Aeon Sophia herself. And then, after having incorporated into her ionic currents some of those strands and nucleic beadwork of the Anthropos template that belong uniquely to the feminine component of the template, she morphed downward into a spiral that eventually produced the planet Earth. So it was that the feminine components of the Anthropos template came to be incorporated into the material body of the Earth. And so to continue this scenario, which is not an introduction of new material, but an incorporation of existing mythological material, to continue this scenario, John developed the story further in other writings, particularly the writings on the Chthonian romance to be found on metahistory.org. Chthonian is pronounced Chthonian, and it refers to the original foundations of the planet Earth. The Chthonian romance can be found under the title Tree Nymphs and Tree Hung Shamans, and that is in the section of metahistory.org which you reach by clicking on Living Myth. Click on Living Myth and then scroll down to Tree Nymphs and Tree Hung Shamans, and essay number 2 in that series, The Chthonian Romance, describes in more length the shearing of the Anthropos template and the separation of the sexes. In fact, it describes them in extensive length. So what you would say then, perhaps, is that John's writings on the Chthonian Romance are an extrapolation of an event in the 9-episode narrative. But going back to the 9-episode narrative itself, FGS 1.0, let me summarize the elements in that narrative before proceeding to FGS 2.0 and 3.0, which is current. The 9-episode rendition John presents does not include any single element or incident not supported by the given textual materials, except one, that is the location of the projection of the Anthropos. It includes an embellishment or extrapolation in episode 7 of a mythological theme, which again is not explicitly or textually discernible in the surviving Gnostic writings. If you comb with a fine-tooth comb through the Nag Hammadi materials, you cannot find specific reference to the separation of the sexes as such. The episode is not explicitly present in the surviving material, but let's remember that the surviving material is nothing but a handful of fragmentary shards of a vast mosaic visionary narrative. We're lucky if that we even have that. And also, would bear in mind something that no scholar, to my knowledge, has so far observed. Contained within the Nag Hammadi writings, which are dated to about 325 AD, is a text or a fragment of a text from Plato, which dates to about 385 BC, that is to say, 700 years earlier. Now, it's rather amazing, and I don't think scholars have paid enough attention to this point, and I think John would agree with me, that there's a fragment of Plato, of a Platonic dialogue, stuffed in with a jumble of materials found in the clay jars in Coptic transcription in December 1945 in Egypt. Well, I guess that would say, at the very least, we can infer that those students who compiled those materials in Coptic were aware that the Gnostic mystery schools incorporated some teachings from the Greek language tradition of Plato and Aristotle. Well, you find explicit reference to the separation of the sexes in the Symposium of Plato. So therefore, I think that I can rest John's case quite comfortably, that he is not exaggerating, embellishing, or fabulating without an evidential basis by including the separation of the sexes into the scenario. Finally, while discussing the introduction of a new element into the narrative and the inclusion of a mythological theme, pre-existing mythological theme, in the narrative, it's also worth pointing out what is excluded from the narrative, and that is the episode that would describe the creation of the moon. Having raked through all of the existing Gnostic material in Coptic and Greek, there is not one trace, I can assure you, of a description of how the moon was created in the process of the Aeon Sophia morphing into the planet Earth. So this remains an episode to be restored to the myth. But standing back and just looking at FGS 1.0 in this summary view and orientation for newcomers, I can assert that that is what you see. What you see is what you get, and what you get is what you see, and that is what is in the 9 episodes. So how then do we go from that, FGS 1.0, to the updated version, FGS 2.0? Well, that did not happen by accident. It did not happen as something that John Lash confabulated by himself in his own mind. It did not happen because he wanted to make a name on the internet by saying sensational things or by adding his own personal mythological fictions to a sacred birthright. The sacred narrative of the divine Sophia is the birthright of all of humanity and needs to be treated with enormous respect as such. Therefore, in FGS 1.0, you find the parameters and content rigorously observed. on what grounds then can this narrative be developed to FGS 2.0? The answer is simple. Only on the grounds of genuine Telestic and Shamanic investigation in our time, staying within the framework of the story, observing rigorously the parameters and plot lines of the story, and working, as John does, with a group of dedicated visionary accomplices. So when John sent out the invitation to the Gaia Navigation Experiment in June of 2011, the development of FGS 2.0 was initiated. Now, let's consider the platform or premise upon which John made that invitation. I ask you to recall, both newcomers and veteran crew members, that of the 9 episodes of the Sophianic Vision story, the 9th one is titled Sophia's Correction. John has pointed out a number of times that Gnostics of the mystery schools who developed, preserved, recorded, and taught this sublime visionary cosmological story found in the story the clue to a future event called Diorthosis, which scholars translate as correction. The Diorthosis of the Aeon Sophia is an element in the sacred narrative of the Telestai. But bear in mind the supreme importance of this element. It was something to occur. The Gnostics saw this element as an event to occur in the future relative to their lifetimes. That is to say, that the Gnostics of the pre-Christian era already saw ahead to an event in the life of the Aeon Sophia, that is to say, in the life of the living earth, the planetary animal mother, and in the life of humanity. They saw this event in the future. They called it the Diorthosis of the Aeon Sophia, Sophia's correction. I believe that there are three and three only, specific textual occurrences of the word diorthosis, it's a Greek word, in the Nag Hammadi materials. Three. And each time, it is explicitly clear that the initiates of that period pointed to an event to come about in the future. But they did not say exactly when or how, and they did not even define exactly what Sophia's correction was going to be. Okay, now fast forward to the 21st century. Fast forward to the month of March 2011. At that moment in time, John Lash, who was not then designated as the navigator, used his long-time observations of certain subtle details in the Earth-Moon dynamic, namely the activity of the barycenter of the Earth and the apsides of the Moon, to make an observation of an event that occurred on March 19th that year, which was in very close proximity to the nuclear accident, if you will, at Fukushima. Accompanying that nuclear accident was something called a supermoon. And indeed, this supermoon was not merely known to John Lash due to his close observations over a period of 40 years of the fact that the moon is sometimes closer to the Earth and sometimes more distant. But it was noted by the entire world. And many, many astronomers and both professional and amateur, made a point of distributing on the internet an alert that there would be a supermoon on March 19th, 2011. What John Lash realized at that moment was that that supermoon corresponded to the moment when Sophia, the Earth, the living planet, the material body of the planet acting as a living being, transmitted a signal to the palindromic aeons, a signal to the galactic center. And the moment that signal was delivered, Sophia's correction began. So, you can say that this is all hypothetical, that this is an enormous invention. And yes, it is. It is an enormous invention. It is an enormous feat of human imagination. But I ask you to consider, whose invention is it? If you think that it is merely the invention of one person, you are sorely and sadly wrong. Let's not forget that FGS 1.0 contains already the germ of this event, Sophia's correction, without defining it. The pre-existing Gnostic materials assure us that this event is due to occur at some moment in the long journey of the Aeon Sophia in her embodiment as the planet Earth. They assure us that at some moment in the laboratory setting where humanity lives, in the habitat of the Earth, this event is due to occur. Well, the observation of the moment when it occurs is not an invention of one person. It is an observation that could be made by anyone who was prepared to make the observation, and that is what happened. But concurrently and instantly as that observation was made, an offer went out into the world to verify if that observation is true. And so the premise of the Gaia navigation experiment, as stated by the navigator, who now would be called the navigator within the metaphor of the experiment, was simply that. Let's see if we can verify that Sophia's correction, as predicted in the Gnostic materials, is currently underway. Let's see if and how a dedicated group of human beings, the crew of the Gaia navigation experiment, can track and verify this immense, momentous, sublime, divine, mysterious, transformative, cosmic event. And that is the beginning of FGS 2.0, the invitation to the GNE. Now, during the first 2 years of the GNE, up until January, just under 2 years, year and a half, up until January of 2013, the navigator and the crew made certain discoveries. And from these discoveries comes the new content of the sacred narrative, content that is not based on any pre-existing textual material, although it is consistent with pre-existing material, and it does observe rigorously the framework of the narrative, the plot. That is to say, and I ask that newcomers consider this proposition I'm now stating with close and careful scrutiny. That is to say that any new material introduced into FGS 1.0 to bring it to FGS 2.0 rigorously observes the plot of the original narrative. One of the beauties and joys and delights, but also the challenge and discipline of this visionary story is to stay in the story and to stay consistent within the plot, because the power of the story teaches how to experience and extend the story. The power of the story in itself is enough, does not require embellishment from extraneous sources. It does not require the inclusion of extraneous material from any source whatsoever. Such is the power of this story. So now, coming around up to the 2-year point of the Gaia navigation experiment, the navigator can confidentially report that he and the crew have evolved FGS through 2.0, and at the beginning of 2013, we reach FGS 3.0. So let me specify as briefly as I can the elements added to the original narrative in 2.0, and then come in the conclusion of this briefing to the key element in the 3.0 version of the Sophianic vision story. In developing FGS 2.0 with the crew of the GNA, the navigator took a step in the fall of the year 2011 and going into 2012. This step was to go back to episode 4 in the 1.0 version. Episode 4 is called The Cosmic Power Surge. And this episode describes the moment when the Aeon Sophia, due to the power of her dreaming, was pulled out of the galactic center and actually plunged into the area of the encircling galactic limbs. This is an actual astronomical event that occurred at a very, very early stage of cosmic history, if you will, before the Earth was formed, before the formation of the Earth. And working with the crew during that period of time, the navigator determined that new elements came to light regarding what happened to the Aeon Sophia before her fall. So this is new material in the FGS coming forth from episode 3 and episode 4. Episode 3, Projecting the Anthropos. Episode 4, The Plunge from the Galactic Core. And what the navigator determined through his shamanic investigations and through his ongoing dialogue with crew members was an additional scenario that occurred at the galactic core prior to Sophia's plunge. During that time, acting as it were from an observation booth at the galactic core, Sophia and the other aeons, or gods, or generators, observed 9 particular planetary experiments involving the Anthropos strain. Episode 3 describes the projection of the Anthropos by Sophia and Thelete. Using a singularity provided by the originator, these two aeons constructed the genomic plasm of a living species, that is humanity, and they calibrated it according to specific components. The calibration of the Anthropos is also a factor of FGS 2.0. But in addition to the calibration and the description of the seven discrete elements of that calibration. The navigator and the crew arrived at a visionary addition based on reference to the nine avatars of Vishnu in Hindu mythology. So once again, in introducing this elaboration or extrapolation of the original myth, the Gnostic scholar drew carefully upon material from comparative mythology. It is possible to draw upon myths and indigenous narratives from around the world to embellish and flesh out the Sophianic vision story, as long as you stay within the plot, as long as you observe the plot of the story. And this is what John and the crew did during that period from the fall of 2011 into 2012. They determined that the Anthropos strain implanted in the Orion Nebula rapidly seeded itself in a number of worlds. That is to say, filaments of the Anthropos template, which is like a spider web composed of beads or chains of nuclear dew, filaments from that matrix went out and spread through the galactic arms and seeded in different worlds. And there were nine different experiments that arose quite rapidly in aeonic terms, in a matter of days, in terms of human time, in a matter of hundreds of thousands of years. But over this period of time, nine experiments with the Anthropos unfolded prior to the current one which we are in. So we call ourselves today Anthropos 10, because we are the 10th permutation of the Anthropos template projected from the galactic center so that it can unfold in a planetary laboratory setting. Sophia, Thelete, and the aeons of the Prolomic core observed that the nine previous experiments had failed due to the Anthropos turning against its environment. That is equivalent to a culture being developed in a petri dish, turning against the medium in which it is being cultured and destroying it. This is what happened with the Anthropos in nine previous experiments, in nine previous planetary worlds. That is an addition that constitutes the body of FGS 2.0. The second factor that was a momentous addition to FGS 2.0 is a consequence of that factor. In the summer and fall, up until the first week of September of 2012, the navigator and the crew were able to actually observe in the heavens, in the visible sky, the formation of a new constellation, which showed that measures were being taken by Sophia, since she sent a signal to the Galactic Center in March 2011. Measures were being taken by Sophia, along with incoming assistance from the Galactic Center, to form a permanent link to the galactic center, an alignment of the planet Earth to the galactic center that would allow the Aeon Sophia to achieve her correction. The period of March 2011 to March 2014 is the 3 years of the setting of the initial conditions of her correction. Her correction then continues for another 200 years until 2216, which is the end of this kalpa, or the end of this designated day of the experiment. 1 day of an aeonic experiment is around 26,000 years of human time. By the end of the day of this experiment, which is now in its 11th minute from ending, the Aeon Sophia is determined to achieve a correction of the experiment with humanity on the Earth, which is her body. and to bring the experiment back to the conditions that will ensure its success. She does this by basing her correction upon what she learned by observing the 9 previous failures of the experiment. So FGS 2.0 includes, in episode 3, her study of those 9 previous experiments, and it includes the pact that she made with humanity in a 10th experiment, which she dreamed unilaterally. In other words, after viewing these 9 failed experiments of the Anthropos strain, of which she herself was the mother or co-creator, along with Thelete, the Aeon Sophia, the Aeonic goddess, decided that she would envision, with her power of imagination, a 10th experiment, according to particular terms, and that if that experiment tended in its final stage to go wrong, she would intervene in an avataric event. That is the second factor in FGS 2.0, the avataric intervention of Sophia herself. It turns out, however, and this is an exciting discovery made by the navigator and the crew in the course of 2012, that Sophia would have been unable to accomplish this avataric intervention in our current experiment completely by herself and on her own terms. Why not? Because it involved the use of a technique only known to the more advanced and mature aeonic generators. That is the technique of narrative spooling. And this technique involves using a spindle in the galactic arms in order to deploy a line from the galactic core to any particular planetary laboratory. That is to say, there has to be a station, a relay station, or spindle materially present in the galactic arms. In the case of our galaxy, in the case of the third galactic arm, where the solar system is located, that spindle is provided by the star formation known as the Pleiades. So, to their amazement and to their wonder, the navigator and the G&E crew observed, through 2012, how the aeons in the Pleromic core, responding to Sophia's signal of March 2011, proceeded to deploy a connecting mechanism. They deployed a massive cable of alignment consisting of 21 strands, and they deployed it from the galactic core through the Pleiades spindle device to the Earth. And the proof and evidence of setting up that relay mechanism, aligning the Earth to the planet, to the galactic core, was the appearance of a new constellation in the sky in the first week of September 2012, the constellation of the celestial anchor. And that is the third factor in FGS 2.0. So, the 3 factors are the review before her plunge of the 9 previous planetary experiments with Anthropos that failed. 2, the unilateral dreaming of a 10th experiment in which Sophia herself would intervene were it to go wrong, as the 9 previous ones did. And 3, the accomplishment of the means for her to do that by the Pleromic relay mechanism established through the spindle of the Pleiades. Those are the 3 unique factors that make FGS 2.0 a distinct and faithful elaboration of the original sacred narrative. Now we come to FGS 3.0. The navigator John Lash and the crew of the G&E are currently developing 3.0. They are doing so by using the power of the luminous epinoia, the imagination capacity endowed in the human species from its origination in the Pleromic core. In other words, it is the power of the human imagination, properly guided by the Sophianic narrative, that allows human animals to participate in the narrative and to actually collaborate with the Aeon Sophia in her correction. With FGS 3.0, the GNE participants reach the critical moment of collaboration. The navigator announced this moment in the first talks of the year 2013. Specifically, in briefing number 50, the revelation of her method, which was posted on the 19th of February, 2013. And the preceding briefing, posted and recorded on the 16th of February, the birthday of Jan Michel Kerouac, the initial secret of the Gaian Dakinis. In these two talks, 48 and 50, the navigator presented or stated and defined those elements which bring the sacred narrative to its 3.0 version. So the navigator and the crew are now in what is technically called by the comparative mythologist Lucien Levébrule, participation mystique. Participation mystique is mystical participation. To be in mystical participation means to be living the sacred narrative through the power of imagination and in the depth of its truly cosmically mysterious potential. Witnesses to the Nahual of the Wisdom Goddess, whether they be the veteran crew members of the GNE, newcomers who are hearing me for the first time today, or those who enter this sublime adventure in the future, you witnesses, then and now, now and in the future, you witnesses, one and all, are accessory to the correction of the Divine Sophia. And FGS 4.0 is the narrative to come, the narrative in which you are present at the decisive moment of that correction. FGS 3.0 defines that moment and points to it. FGS 4.0 describes that moment as it happens in real time. And that moment is due to happen between now, April 2013, when I speak, and the spring of 2014. It is imminent in the momentum of human experience right now to understand this momentum and to realize how it can determine the course of your life as a human animal participating in the fate of the human species and even orchestrating the fate of the human species. It is sufficient to see the two key factors introduced by the navigator in FGS 3.0. Once pleromic relay was established, that is an episode in 2.0, the moment was ripe for the intervention that the Aeon Sophia prepared even before she plunged from the galactic core. This intervention is the most decisive event in her correction process. As the navigator explains in NB48, The Ultimate Secret of the Gaian Dakinis, and in NB50, The Revelation of Her Method, the Aeon Sophia accomplishes her intervention through the mechanism of a tulpa, but she does not do so without some measure of human participation. To participate in this mysterious and wonderful event, be you a veteran of the crew or a newcomer, you must understand the fundamental truth of nav briefing number 48, that the power of the planetary wisdom goddess depends on your capacity to command it. In planetary tantra, human animals are not called to follow the commandments of a creator deity, a paternal father deity, or off-planet father god. That is a lie. That is a distortion. The attempts that humanity has made to follow the commandments of the Father God through history have led to nothing but division and destruction. The very claim that human beings must follow the commands of God is a hideous and murderous deceit and belongs to an evil agenda. The truth is that the true divinities of this planet hold as their highest wish the wish that you command them. And so, even the Aeon Sophia, as she prepares her tulpa, which is the Kalki Kali avatar of her intervention, wishes that we would command that intervention, that we call it into action. That call, that challenge, that fantastic opportunity is the signature of FGS 3.0. And the signature of 4.0 is its achievement. So that is the way that I would summarize, not only for G&E crew members, but for anyone who cares to listen, the adventure of developing the sacred narrative of Sophia, the planetary animal mother. And in further briefings in the 60 series on Gaiaspora.org, the navigator will concentrate on the practical and visionary requirements to hold true to this sacred opportunity and to live the Sophia myth in the world today, in the social and collective drama. That is to say, live the crisis of this moment for humanity from the very core of your own individual being out to the fullest scope of your sacred and divine potential with humanity, with the Antipos. And that is your call to Sophia's correction. And that is such.